This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, April the 30th. I'm Johnny Kane with Sportscaster.com, and this is Open Mic. Now, this isn't a typical sports talk show, heavy on opinions, hot takes, headlines of the day. This is more of a show that goes a little deeper into what makes the stories and really who's behind telling the stories. So speaking of stories, I just flew back from New York covering the Detroit Pistons in the Eastern Conference playoffs last night. And I'm telling you, this team has everybody talking. I met this UPS driver, a diehard Knicks fan on the street in Times Square. He gave me an earful. And then the TSA agent at DTW told me she lives for this. We have a special show laid out that focuses on the Pistons and really about life in the NBA. And the NBA might be a league that, you know, many of you may not be as familiar with as, say, the NFL or Major League Baseball. I've personally been a part of the NBA for the past 11 years, and it's changed my life. It was a good friend of mine, Brian Henry. He's one of the best live game producers I know. He once said, "What a league." And it's a line I use even today. You know, I love working in the NBA. I love what the Pistons as an organization represents in the city of Detroit. And I know it's sometimes overused, right, when we refer to blue-collar attitude in sports. But really, that's what this organization stands for. And if you go back to some of the best years in the franchise, you had the Bad Boys, right? Tough, gritty, pack-your-lunch pail group in the late 80s, early 90s. And then it was the going-to-work Pistons in the 2000s. Hard-nosed, aggressive. They played in six straight Eastern Conference finals. And now you look at the present-day Pistons, and they've orchestrated the greatest single-season turnaround in league history. They've tripled last season's win total, and now we're just two wins away from advancing to the Eastern Conference semifinals. And the motto for this year's team is back to work. There's no entitlement attached to this team. Our guest tonight, 10-year NBA veteran and a man who spent the past 30 years as a basketball analyst, Tim McCormick, joins the show. We'll also hear from TNT sideline reporter Lauren Jabara. Lauren grew up in Waterford, graduated from Michigan, and now one of the rising young sports reporters on national TV. And if you ever wondered what it'd be like to be a beat reporter for an NBA team, you'll hear firsthand from Omari Sankofa of the Detroit Free Press, one of the more talented young writers in our city. And finally, we'll hear from a pro basketball player named Jordan Morgan, starred for the Wolverines and is currently playing in South Korea. It's a full show, and we're going to tip things off with Giovanni Mascheri, recent graduate of Oakland University, who sat down with former NBA player Tim McCormick.
Joining me today is a fantastic basketball mind from the great state of Michigan, a broadcaster for the Pistons as well. Tim McCormick joins me today. Tim, how are you?
Fantastic, Gio. Thanks for having me on. Love talking about one of my favorite topics. I've been a Pistons fan since growing up on the east side of Detroit as a young boy, dreaming about playing in the NBA, dreaming about my favorite team. So I have thoroughly enjoyed the Pistons back in the playoffs for the first time since 2008. Seems like just an amazing turnaround.
Tim, from your perspective, I mean, from one year to the other, 14 wins to the 40 plus to get us into the playoffs. Coach JB Bickerstaff, what has he done? Like, what were the missing pieces that he brought to get the Pistons this quick turnaround?
He's an amazing defensive coach. He holds his team accountable. He can be tough, and he can also be encouraging. And I also think Trajan Langdon deserves a lot of credit. There were two major flaws with last year's team, Gio. The first is that Monty Williams did not do a good job establishing a defensive foundation. He didn't hold the players accountable. They were very erratic with their rotations. The young guys didn't have a clue what they were doing. And JB Bickerstaff is the opposite. You know, these are our core principles. This is what we're going to do. We're going to do it every game. We're going to do it as hard as we can. And if you don't do it, you're going to sit down on the bench. So that's a great message, especially because the Pistons are so young. The second key is that last year, Cade Cunningham struggled a lot because opposing teams just sagged into the paint and they said, "We don't think that this team can shoot. We're going to take away the paint." And there was just no spacing. By adding Tim Hardaway Jr., Tobias Harris, and Malik Beasley, all of a sudden the spacing was so much better. And we saw Cade Cunningham able to drive to the basket. Jalen Duren was able to get his lob game going. And then they added Dennis Schroeder, and he has been the perfect fit because he's a good defensive player and he allows Cade Cunningham to move off the ball some. So those are the two main reasons why the Pistons were able to triple their win total of 14 from last year.
And what seems so great about it is that like a lot of the pieces, like you mentioned, Trangia Langdon made a lot of great additions to add that veteran presence, but a lot of what the Pistons had was already there. It just needed to be tapped into, and it seemed like Bickerstaff was the perfect person to unlock all of that.
Right. And one of the hidden keys is that, yeah, sure, they added the shooters, but those three shooters, Hardaway Jr., Harris, and Beasley, are also world-class leaders. They set a standard for the young guys to follow. They talk to them. And it's also a visual thing, lead by example. If your veteran players after practice are working with the coaches on their shooting, their ball handling, their off the dribble moves, young players don't just leave. They see that and they want to be really good too. So they follow. So not only are our veteran shooters great role models, they're also really good at the fundamentals of the game.
And I want to bring it to kind of like a fan's perspective here. And you mentioned that your love for the Pistons is lifelong. But you know, this is galvanizing for the city. And when we got a peek of it when we see the Pistons play playoff games in LCA for, I think, the first time since the buildings opened. The electricity in the city is nuts when it comes to this team.
Well, I was obviously there for the broadcast in game three. And I had a flashback to June 15th of 2004. That's the day at the Palace that the Pistons beat Kobe and Shaq, won an NBA championship, and the building was electric. The crowd was going crazy, and I saw and felt the same vibe in game three. The Pistons fans were such a strong impact. And what happens is I saw a ton of young people wearing their Pistons jerseys, and guess what? They're hooked now. They experience something that they love. And when you look at the Pistons roster, there's a lot of young players that are going to continue to grow. So this Pistons surge of enthusiasm and quality play is going to do nothing but improve. It's going to grow. And all these young fans are going to be hooked for life.
And I want to ask, like we mentioned the young players and there's that mix of young and veteran presence. And when it comes to being in the playoffs, how important is it to have guys who have been there before to guide the young fellas when it comes to the bigger stage of the playoffs? Because it's different and you see it every year that you know the adjustments need to be made for it.
Well, in game one in Madison Square Garden, you know who wasn't very good? Cade Cunningham wasn't very good. Jalen Duren struggled. Asar Thompson had a poor performance because the game is just incredibly fast in the playoffs. I remember my first NBA playoff game ever. I sat back and said, oh my gosh, I can't believe how hard everybody was playing. Every possession was critical for success. So the other factor is that Madison Square Garden is different than every other building. During my NBA career, I played in 8 different professional venues, Madison Square Garden, the LA Forum, the Chicago Stadium, the Palace. I experienced the different arenas, and Madison Square Garden is the hardest that I ever played in. And I think that that caught our Piston young guys off guard. So all of these experiences will make them better. And now they're coming from a place of experience and knowledge. When they're in the playoffs next year and the following year, they are going to be the dominant ones that say to the young players, you guys can follow me now. I've been through this. I know what to expect.
And then when it comes to the home court side of things, so Madison Square Garden is its own zoo and it's nuts in there. But the first game back in Detroit for game three, that crowd was intense as well. When you're the home team and you have such a hungry fan base like we had at LCA, can that sometimes play against you? Could that be like too much at once? I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it can. And what I would say happens is that when you go on the road, and I used to love being on the road because of the fact that it's a close-knit group that's coming together. There are no distractions at all. You go to shoot-around practice. You have your video sessions, you get your rest, you get a great meal. Maybe you do something that's focused on solitude more, like you might go to a movie the night before the game and just kind of like think through things. When you're at home, you're worried about tickets and there's an internal pressure where your fans are so loud, you can see how much they care, how passionate they are. And in some ways, it makes it harder. Going on the road, it's a singular purpose. We've got to win this game. We're here as 12 people together. We've got our coaches. We've got our game plan. We're going to win this game. I'm not saying it's an advantage to play on the road, but I'm saying I can understand what you're saying.
Well, Tim McCormick, thank you so much for joining us here on sportscaster.com.
My pleasure, Gio. Good talking to you.
Tim McCormick, one-time Mr. Basketball Award winner for Clarkston High School and a member of the Michigan Hall of Honor. He's a terrific person, wealth of knowledge, and you can see him regularly on FanDuel Sports Network Detroit as one of the pregame analysts on Pistons Live. You know, covering sports for a living is something that I've always said is a dream job, you know, and it really is. It's the idea of going to practices and then going to games and being part of that as your weekly routine. Sometimes it still doesn't even seem real. You know, you're waiting for somebody to step in and say, okay, now you got to go get a real job. But it is a real job. It's the best job. And whether you work in television broadcast or on radio or in print, the essence of what we try to do is the same. It's just that the medium or the platform that we use changes. And I'll say this, we're all in it together. You know, TV, radio, and print, that's huge. We all share a similar space in the locker rooms, share a similar space in press conferences. And I think there's a mutual respect among the group, which makes it work. And speaking for the Pistons group, there's a really talented pool of writers who cover the team on a daily basis. They're at every practice, churning out content, whether it's the Detroit News, the Athletic, the Free Press, Pistons.com, MLive, you know, plenty of outlets to consume Pistons content. And one writer who I've gotten to know over the past couple of seasons covering the team is Omari Sankofa from the Free Press. He has his own podcast with Motor City Hoops, but really, he has this really good writing style and has built some great relationships with the players and built great relationships with the coaching staff. Aiden Novak's a student at Lake Orion High School. He's in the Sportscaster program. And he had a chance to go one-on-one with Omari about what it's like behind the scenes, covering the Pistons day in and day out.
Omari, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Aiden, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So let's start with the basics. For people who might not know, can you explain what a beat writer does, especially when it comes to covering a team like the Pistons?
Sure. So as a beat writer, you're essentially responsible for covering every aspect of the team. You are that team's news guy, whether it's a game, a transaction, an injury, feature story, like behind the scenes stuff with the coaches, front office. As a beat writer, you're responsible for all of that. You're covering all the games, home and road. You're going to the practices. You know, you're talking to players and coaches before the game, after the game. Everywhere they are is where you are. It's your responsibility to know as much as you can so that you can report and be the information source for that team.
And you, like you said, you're around the players and coaches all the time. What's something that fans might not realize about what it's like really inside an NBA team during a long season?
They're regular people. They're NBA players and coaches, and they're high profile, but you know, they laugh and joke around, and they're just like everybody else in a way. And I think that's what's rewarding about the job, is just to kind of get to know people personally, not just through the lens of a fan on TV who might put these people on a pedestal, but more so getting to know these people on a personal level. You know, it's really cool to be able to kind of follow that day by day and see how they navigate this crazy world.
Focusing a little bit more on the team, the Pistons are so young right now with players like Cade Cunningham, Jalen Duren, and Asar Thompson. From what you see up close, what's the vibe around this team?
The vibes are good. It's been a very confident group all season. It's been a very resilient group all season. You know, they understand that they're here now, right? Like, you had a season that was far more successful than anybody could have expected. They added 30 wins, going from 14 to 44. But, you know, I think there's also just a lot of pride and a lot of confidence that, you know, this is a group that's figured things out, whether it's this year or a future year. You know, they will continue to make that type of push. So I think it's just confidence right now.
Okay, take us behind the scenes for game day. What's your full routine from the morning shoot around to the late night post game article?
Yeah, so shoot around is typically 10 or 11 a.m., depending on if you're home or on the road. So for a 10 a.m. shoot around, like let's say here in Detroit, I'll probably get to the practice facility like 10:20. And then we go down to shoot around. I might talk to a player or coach if I have anything planned, or chat to people off to the side. And after shoot around, like might be 11:30 noon, you kind of have that 4-hour window before it's game time again. So for a 7 p.m. game, I would say doors for media typically open around 4:30. The home coach always talks an hour and 45 minutes before the game. So for a 7 p.m. game, we're talking to JB Bickerstaff at 5:15. So typically I'll get to the arena by like 5, but the work really does start probably about 2 hours before the game, at least on average. So opposing coach speaks at 90 minutes before the game. I may go to the road coach's press conference at 5:30. And then you have an hour and a half before the game. Sometimes I'll just transcribe the interviews and maybe knock out some work if I'm going to work on something after the game, just to get a head start. Sometimes I'll just sit in the arena and talk to people from the team. And then obviously you have the game. So to say this game goes from like 7 to, you know, 9:15, 9:30-ish. You do post-game interviews, and that's a press conference with coach and then one or two players. And then you go to the locker room after and do any more interviews you need. And then you have a story to write. And I typically produce two stories on game night. So I'm writing an instant story that's due pretty much right after the buzzer. So I'm writing during the game. And then I have a follow-up story after. So by the time you finish interviews and writing, if I'm really quick that night, I might be done before 11. You know, if it's a longer night for whatever reason, I mean, I finish up to after midnight. So from 10 a.m. to like 10 p.m., like off and on, you're always doing something team related.
You're around the team way more than the fans are. What's one thing that most people don't see about what it's really like during a long NBA season?
I think just the sheer amount of travel and getting from point A to point B is something that fans may not pay attention to as much. Let's say it's a two-game road trip. You practice Monday, you leave Monday. Let's say you're going to Miami. You get to Miami Monday night. Tuesday, you have a shoot around. And then typically teams leave like right after the game. So like if the game wraps up at like 10, oftentimes they're on the flight by like midnight to board the next spot. So if you're going from like Miami to Dallas, you're getting to Dallas probably 2 or 3 a.m. You may have a practice that day. And it's just a lot of like immediately playing games and boarding flights, playing games and boarding flights. But once you get to like 50, 60, 65 games, that really does begin to add up. And I think you kind of notice for rookies especially, like they're not used to playing that much basketball that frequently. There are always fans like in the NBA who got to live and die by every game. And like they can't stand when a star player has like an off night, but they're like anybody else. Sometimes you have a bad day at work because you got a bad night of sleep or you're tired or whatever. And 82 games is a lot. And as a reporter, I'm like, this is like game 4 in the road trip, but they've had all these late flights. And that's really just so much of the season. It's just that marathon aspect of managing it to get from game to game. So I think you learn to kind of look at the overall product, right? Like weeks at a time rather than just games, because you understand that there's so many factors before games that can lead to a certain player's performance. I think fans would be surprised to see just how busy these guys are.
Well, thank you for hanging out with us and giving us the inside look at life on the NBA beat. Let's hope the Pistons keep trending up.
No doubt. Thanks a lot for having me.
The Pistons are trending, and that was Aiden Novak from Lake Orion High School with Pistons beat writer Omari Sankofa from the Free Press. Again, game 6 of the Eastern Conference playoffs is tomorrow night at Little Caesars Arena. And there's a really good article in today's Free Press from Omari about last night's hero of the game, Asar Thompson. Had probably his best two-way performance of the season, had 22 points, and he held Jalen Brunson to just 16 points. It's a good read on Asar. Remember, Asar Thompson, just 22 years old, but really coming to his own as an elite NBA defender. You know, we've been talking about the NBA playoffs and how the Pistons are doing something that we haven't witnessed in 6 years, and that is playing this deep into the postseason. And if you ask anybody involved in pro basketball, they'll tell you that the playoffs are different. And they are. It's on another level. And someone who we witnessed go to another level is Lauren Jabara. You know, not long ago, Lauren was the in-arena host at Little Caesars Arena. And now she's covering the NBA, she's covering the NHL, Major League Baseball, and everything in between for TNT. Lauren has a contagious energy, really a solid reporter, and her ascent to the top of her field in broadcasting is really incredible. She works as hard as anybody that I know in the business. And she took some time in between games to sit down with Sportscaster.com's Lyric Sloan, another rising young voice who hopes to one day break through in this industry. Lyric, a student at Michigan State, interviewing Michigan grad Lauren Jabara.
So right now you're in the middle of the NBA playoffs this year for TNT. What's it like covering such an intense and exciting part of the season?
Yeah, I think the coolest part, especially about the first round, is we don't know where we're going next. Like, I just found out today the next city that I'm going to for game six, which is crazy. But traveling around to all of these different arenas and being able to see all of the different energies that these different crowds, different teams, different cities bring, that's been the most amazing part. The difficult part is covering a game from one series and then a game from another series and trying to stay up on all of the different storylines, because you want to tell the players' stories and the team's stories and the series' story in general, and you want to do it with justice. So being able to keep up, I think that's the hardest part, but it's been such a dream to be able to bop around to all of these different cities and be able to tell the stories of these teams, these players, and these series, and bring that through the TV to all the fans that are watching.
So I was doing research on you. You posted an interview with Jason Tatum, who plays for the Celtics, and you just make your interviews so natural and so personal. And I can really feel that you are Lauren Jabara. You're not pretending to be anyone. You're not a robot, just getting the story how it is. I think that makes you so different from other reporters, is that you're just being yourself and you make it so fun. Did you take time for that to develop, or has it always come naturally to you?
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that. That means a ton, because I feel like it's so important in this industry. Like, we're just having fun like everyone else. Our job is to tell the stories, but it doesn't need to be so serious all the time. We're talking about sports, which is such an incredible, fun community. And I just want to be able to bring that through the screen. So I appreciate that you said that. I think it took a little while for that to come. Not necessarily just like the free flow to come, but for me to feel comfortable being 100% myself on camera. I take it back to when I was at University of Michigan. The first time I was ever on camera, they threw it to me and I forgot my name. I mean, I was looking at the camera and I was like, I was starstruck by the camera. And so that just takes a little while to develop from being like fully scripted and knowing what you want to say and feeling like you need to hit every single word of what you're writing out, to just knowing the game, knowing the flow of the game, knowing how to conduct an interview, but also just try to get the players to open up. Because I feel a lot of the times I'm not with a specific team, I'm with a network. So you're going into all of these different situations and scenarios and not having super close relationships to a lot of these players. So you have to earn the trust immediately. And I feel like the best way to do that is just to make them feel comfortable that you're not going to throw them a curveball question or like really try to throw them off in any way. You're just asking about the game of basketball, which is something that they're so passionate about because that's what they do for a living. Then it also gets them to open up more. And that's our job, is to be a vessel between the players and the fans, right? To get the answers from the players, the stories from the players, and get that to the fans. And so I think, yes, it took a little while to build, but once you feel comfortable with yourself, you feel comfortable on camera, you kind of know how to just like watch the flow of the game and then also read the players. You know, some players are going to be shorter with their answers, some are going to be longer, but it's trying to get their personalities out in those interviews.
So do you come with like notes previously at the game, or how do you prepare for each game since you're never guaranteed anything?
Oh yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of preparation that actually, you know, doesn't show, because being a reporter, you only get in for a few hits every quarter, like 30 or 40 seconds, trying to find out the storylines and what I think would be interesting for the fans to know about these players. So say someone like a Jamal Murray, who missed 6 of the last 8 games of the regular season. I asked him the other day, how important was it for you to get back to the final 2 regular season games to be able to get a few minutes in before playing these heavy playoff minutes? And he gave me a really good answer about that. And I think stuff like that's really interesting, you know, for fans to know, but it's a lot of like behind the scenes research. I talked to Aaron Gordon about the incredible first ever put back dunk for a game winner in the playoffs that he had. And I, you know, got him to open up a little bit. I said, did you think Nikola was passing to you, or did you think that was a shot that was going in? And he gave me a really fun answer. So if I interview him, or if I interview Nikola Jokic after the game, I can use that answer or use that quote from Aaron Gordon on what he saw in that last minute and how they carried the momentum. So it's just like little nuances that you kind of pick up and learn to use over the years.
So throughout all this, what do you think has been the most insane moment so far throughout the playoffs?
This year in the playoffs, I can take you back to, I did MLB postseason this year, and we covered the American League Championship Series. It was the Yankees against the Guardians. And one of the coolest moments was being able to stand up on the stage with the Yankees and hand out the ALCS pennant. And I was interviewing Giancarlo Stanton, who was the ALCS MVP. And that was incredible, talking to Aaron Judge. Like, it was a pinch me moment for myself. I cannot believe this is my life. I cannot believe this is where my career has gone. And I just felt so grateful and so thankful in that moment. So that was like the craziest playoff moment, I would say, for me in my career. This year, the craziest playoff moment that we've seen is definitely that game four winner that I was just talking about. Nikola Jokic threw up a 3-point Hail Mary shot and it was way off. But Aaron Gordon was able to get the rebound and get the first ever playoff postseason putback dunk, which is really crazy when you think about it. And it was literally in the nick of time. It was a highlight reel moment for not only the Denver Nuggets, but to also shift the series back into their momentum. So I think this year for the NBA playoffs, that's been the craziest moment so far.
You know, there have been so many compelling storylines this NBA postseason. Lauren and Lyric continue their discussion. And if you'd like to listen to the interview in its entirety, go to sportscaster.com. We'll have it there for you. But some really good stuff, really good information. Our thanks to Lauren Jabara and also to Lyric Sloan. I'm really into our next interview with Jordan Morgan, who, if you remember, Jordan had a terrific prep career at U of D Jesuit before going on to play for John Beilein at the University of Michigan. Had NBA dreams, went undrafted, but still has carved out a solid career as a pro basketball player in Europe and beyond. Sportscaster.com's Gavin Vlasovic from De La Salle High School caught up with Jordan about what it means to play professionally and his thoughts on the NBA potentially expanding into Europe in the future.
I'm really excited to introduce someone who's taken his game around the world. In Slovenia, Italy, Turkey, France, and is currently balling out in South Korea with the Swan KT Sonic Boom. Thanks for joining us today. Here's Jordan Morgan.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Let's go back to kind of the beginning. Your college ball at U of M. Had a great run there, the 2013 March Madness runner-up and 2013 All-Defensive Team. After college, you built an amazing international career. What was it like kind of adjusting into your first professional or international team overseas?
Man, it's a huge adjustment, I will say. And anybody that's done it will say the same thing. My first season, I went to Italy. I was a little bit fortunate in that respect. I was in Rome, so I was in a nice place to live and everything. It's not always that nice. Trust me, there's, you know, you can be in smaller cities and things like that or harder places to live. But all that being said, the adjustment is big because you leave your family, everything. Even now, I'm in South Korea and I got a 7-month-old at home and my wife is at home. Sometimes you have to sacrifice. It's something that most people don't realize. And the season is long, you know, and it's just a different culture and a different mentality. I mean, there's so many things we could talk. We could talk for probably a whole show about it, but it's definitely a big adjustment.
You've talked about the mental adjustment and kind of the distance between home. I took a rough estimate earlier. It's about 6,500 miles away from Michigan. Yeah. Like, how do you stay motivated and focused that whole time when you're thousands of miles away?
I'm gonna be honest. I mean, it's not for everybody. I've seen a lot of players that are very good players and don't necessarily have the desire or the mental fortitude to stick it out. You have to kind of like grow as a person, like a lot. And you spend a lot of time alone. I'm in Korea, I'm in a 13-hour time difference. So most of my day I spend just in my own time. I talk to my wife and my son, like my family in the mornings or before I go to bed. So it's a big adjustment in that sense. You spend a lot of time by yourself and you got to be comfortable with that. Now, not a lot of people these days are comfortable, you know, sitting by themselves. And it took me a few years to really kind of get the swing of things, but you really, really got to love it, I would say, to make it this long. I've been doing it 11 years. And I would say I love basketball now even more than I did probably when I started, because that's the only way you can survive in this for that long.
You've obviously played all over the world, U.S., Europe, Asia. What's the biggest difference between like Europe and Asian basketball?
So Europe is super competitive. In Europe, if you have a bad season, you get kicked out of the league. Right. So imagine you finish last in the Big Ten or the bottom two in the Big Ten in Michigan basketball. And the next season, you're not in the Big Ten. You're in, no offense to anybody, but you're in the MAC, right? MAC is a great conference, but it's not the Big Ten. So that's what it's like in Europe. So it's super, super competitive. And every game means something. It's just a different mentality. The basketball is very tactical. It's like some of the best basketball minds in the world. And you wonder why some of the best players in the NBA are international now, because they learn how to play the game in a way that they can just read the whole floor. And you got to be able to do that in Europe. Asia is a little bit different. I come here, one of the reasons that the team I'm with brought me here was because my experience in Europe and being able to help players understand the game a little bit more. I'm almost kind of like coaching a little bit sometimes on how to guard things or plays and things like that. And I would say in general, in Asia, basketball is a little bit more about entertainment. I don't know that they have the same relegation system. And it's more just like for entertainment value. In Asia, you have less foreign players. So I'm one of two Americans on my team versus Europe. You might have five or six or seven, sometimes eight, right? So you're kind of expected to put up numbers, and it's more like an entertainment kind of thing here.
Americans follow college basketball, NBA basketball. Many don't really realize that basketball has kind of been the second most popular team sport in Europe. I announced earlier that the NBA had a partnership with FIBA and is exploring maybe a new basketball league in Europe, aiming to expand their presence and fan base, kind of like what we saw with the NFL or the MLB through international games. What do you think on it? You think that's possible, maybe?
I mean, I think the NBA's got enough power to do it, for sure. You know, I would say most people don't realize how controversial this topic is. People hear NBA going to Europe and they think it's simple or that all Europeans are excited for it. And I would tell you that that's not the case. Many Europeans despise the NBA and the style of play. And another thing people don't realize is that there has been a feud in Europe for the last decade between FIBA, which is the international body of basketball, and EuroLeague, which is the best basketball league outside the NBA, and it's the top teams in Europe. So FIBA runs every international league around the world. So that's the Asian League, East Asian Super League, West Asian Super League, Basketball Africa League, the South American League, whatever. They run all of them. But in Europe, they don't dominate. EuroLeague dominates. And so there's been a feud between them for like the last decade between EuroLeague and the FIBA leagues in Europe. That's Basketball Champions League, that's the FIBA Cup, and that's national teams, right? So like Serbia and France. And so when the NBA says they're going to go to Europe, they're still in the middle of this feud. So how's that going to work? Are they going to partner with EuroLeague? Are they going to partner with FIBA? It's a very touchy situation. So there's a lot to be worked out. But I think what's interesting about the NBA saying they're going to go to Europe is now all of a sudden both sides are trying to be the first in line, the first at the table. And so, you know, there's this balance of like wanting the stable revenues that the NBA brings, but also wanting to maintain the authenticity of the European basketball product.
So let's say hypothetically, NBA does get, they get to Europe. How do you think that affects the NBA at home?
I think you get a few things. Number one, you'll get a more integrated pipeline. There's already been some like developments, right? And just international players coming to the NBA. And you see more and more every year. But I think that's going to become even more of an integrated process. So you'll have development in the G League, you'll have development overseas, but they'll have more control over that, number one. Number two, something that I think that NBA should have been doing for a while now, which is showing more European games. There's no reason that NBA TV shouldn't be showing some of the top European games as it is. And I think this gives them opportunity to expand their portfolio as far as their product goes, to show more games that are, I'm going to be honest, really intense, and they're great to watch. It's super competitive, super tactical. And, you know, I think a lot of NBA fans will probably appreciate seeing players that they knew from past NBA and college playing overseas, right? I think they would enjoy that too.
You've had a unique experience, obviously, coming over internationally. And a part of that also includes your foundation that you established, the Jordan Morgan Foundation. Tell us a little bit about that and how you've managed being an entrepreneur, a philanthropist, and an athlete all at the same time.
First and foremost, the Jordan Morgan Foundation is an expression of like my desire to give back. I've always done community service, something that my parents instilled in me from a young age. When I graduated, I became a professional. I wanted a vehicle to be able, all the philanthropy that I do, all the volunteering, everything, to be able to go through that. And so now the Jordan Morgan Foundation is something that we use to support causes around Detroit, aimed at providing opportunities and access to STEM programs. So I'm a big believer in STEM. I'm an engineering graduate. So for those that don't know STEM or STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, my belief and our belief at the Jordan Morgan Foundation is that STEM education, STEAM education, has the potential to reshape underserved communities because it improves education, it improves performance in school, it improves access to better jobs, and it, overall, it will improve communities. And so that's why we choose to support STEAM.
Awesome. Well, Jordan, thanks again for your time today. We appreciate all your information and insight, especially on any international expansion. Anything that you'd give a final advice to athletes that are trying to maybe take the same route as you or look at a different way of coming up into the professional or international realm?
Yeah, I would say I never imagined that I have this career. My dream was always to play college basketball. And so I think now, especially with access to social media, it's great to dream, but you can never get to those places, to college or the NBA or a professional in general, without focusing intently on where you're at now. So if you're in middle school, if you're in high school, you know, be the best player you can be right now. How can I get better for my next season, right? Taking it one step at a time. And I think just enjoying that, because life changes, man. You really got to be focused on, like, every single day, trying to be the best where you are.
Awesome. Thanks, Jordan, again.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time. Thank you. Once again, people, Jordan Morgan here with us on Sportscasters Open Mic.
Good stuff. Good advice from Jordan Morgan. And that is our show for this week. I want to thank all of our guests for being on. Really good stuff. As I mentioned, the Pistons still alive in the postseason, trailing the best of seven series, 3-2. Game 6 will be tomorrow night in downtown Detroit at 7:30. And for those of you that may be coming down to the game, maybe I'll run into you in person. But for those of you tuning in, I hope you enjoy it. And hopefully we can stretch this season out just a little bit longer. But we appreciate you tuning in to our show. Until next time, I'm Johnny Kane for Sportscasters Open Mic. And we want to thank you for listening.